is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Don't do that, Dave. Then she's going to come disrupt me.
Stacy's
leaving her
purse.
Stuff in here, and she'll just come barging in the middle of the show to come find it, and Dave put it by my feet.
That's okay. Yeah. She'll be here.
I'm going to impede her progress when she comes in.
Okay.
Big stuff coming up today. We'll talk some baseball with Ryan Roland Smith. He'll join us at 3:30 today. Jim doesn't know how the on-off thing works with the mic yet.
Leave me alone.
It's still a foreign
I come
concept.
In here every day, and I've got to look at this picture of myself from the Apple Cup.
We'll change it.
Well, I don't know how to change it.
I'll show you how to change it.
All right.
Jim, I'll show you.
Yeah. I still look sad.
You are sad in that picture. That's not going to change.
No,
not
going to
change. No. John Clayton at 4 o'clock. It's Tuesday, which means El Hombre. Michael Bradley will be with us at 5 o'clock, so make sure you stay tuned for that. That's a can't-miss segment. And then I'm looking forward to talking to Ryan. We haven't talked to him yet this year, right?
No, but last year we had him on 3:30 every Tuesday, and so we'll catch up on what's going on down there. Mariners are playing today. The game will be tape delayed tonight, 7 o'clock, 7:10 ESPN Seattle. But
he's our guy. Turns out he's an Australian hillbilly.
Australian hillbilly.
Is that Bogan?
Bogan.
Is that what he calls himself?
Yeah, he sent me a video of him and his beautiful wife and their small child at some monster truck rally. And, like, there's trucks out there breathing fire and whatnot. And then he's very proudly there, and his wife has this look like, yeah, well, I guess I signed up for this when I marry him. And then the little baby girl had the headphones on so she wouldn't hurt her ears. And he had this big grin on his face like, this is the greatest thing I've ever done.
So
This is culture.
He calls himself that, and that's their equivalent of hillbilly.
Yes. So just ask him about that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk to our Australian hillbilly friend at 3:30 and talk to him about monster trucks and Mariner baseball. Meanwhile, you got the combine happening out there in Indianapolis, and John Schneider, Pete Carroll spoke with the media today. I want to get into a few different things that they said. John Schneider being peppered. I saw a bunch of these interviews with different people outside of Schneider. I watched Burrow and some of these other people. It's always interesting to see the approach of the press out there when you can tell a concerted effort to try to get a guy to say something. Right, you can tell there's an agenda. I need this guy to comment. In Burrow's case, it was about the Bengals. So I'm going to go from every angle. You heard every angle being tried to get him to say something inflammatory.
Well, yeah, and then didn't he just refute everything that
he did? A great job.
For the longest time, people were thinking, well, Joe Burrow doesn't want to play for the Bengals, and he said it never came from his camp.
He did a great job. We can get into that.
Wait,
later.
He has a camp?
His camp, his people.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if he used the word camp. I thought
I think Jim put that in there.
But took him out of context.
John Schneider is out there speaking with the media, and he was being asked about what positions were going to be priorities, and he wouldn't really commit to anything in particular. But here's what he said to that.
Yeah, I mean we lost three runners in 13 days or something like that. You know, so I can't. You know, I'm not going to tell you like what positions, like what the priority is. I don't know. With Rashad, I don't know, you know, if, you know, day one, if he's going to be ready to go. I would, you know, I mean, I can't tell you that. But, you know, CJ and Chris, CJ's unrestricted, so we'll see what happens there.
First of all, I feel like with Penny, and it's not any kind of testament to who he is or anything, but if it's like 6 to 10 weeks, for example, for him it's going to be 10 weeks. I feel like it takes him a little bit longer to get healthy. And, you know, and then there are guys like Luke Wilson who, you know, they're going to be 5.5 weeks in that scenario. So, yeah, that's something that's probably, you know, you can't go in thinking that he's going to be back for sure. And I think there's sound from Pete later.
Right here.
Yeah.
Talking about Penny.
It'll be an extraordinary accomplishment if he was ready by the time we got to camp and all that. So we'll just see what happens. You know, we're not going to set any deadline on it. We'll just see how he develops. But this is the kind of timing that might take you into the PUP thing.
So, you know, he says an extraordinary accomplishment. So that makes it sound like
he's ready.
Yeah, it makes it sound like that he's probably not going to be
highly
ready.
Unlikely. And then Pete was asked about Chris Carson, and here's his update on Carson.
Chris is doing really well. There's not a whole lot Chris can do, so he hasn't done very many things wrong. So it's an injury that just it takes time, and it's serious because it's a hip, but it's not serious in that we know what's going to happen. It's not displaced or any of that kind of stuff. We just need to wait it out, and which is really hard for Chris because he's a workout maniac and loves to be on in the weight room and all that. He's doing the best he can, and he's done everything he can possibly do, and we're just hoping he doesn't overdo it. So we're trying to monitor that, but we're counting on a full recovery. He should be ready to go.
So there you go.
Yeah, you basically got Carson and Homer right now.
And right now
they're not going to bring back ProSize, even if Schneider were to say, yeah, we're looking at. There's just no way they're going to bring back ProSize.
I don't think, but
you're down to two running backs, and even when Penny comes back. The hope is that he'll pick up right where he left off, but the injury that he had and not playing in the preseason, not having a training camp, I don't want to say it's going to be a lost season for Rashad Penny, but he's going to be playing catch up most of the season. Anyway.
Well, and as Dave alluded to with his healing, we saw him get injured as a rookie, much less severe injury, much less.
As his finger.
Yeah, but everybody points to that as the reason why he was not very productive as a rookie. I'm thinking, all right, well, let's take that on face value, say it's true, that really impeded his progress and, it really just his development was completely set back from it. What might he be like with an injury like this? I understand he's a rookie. It's a different dynamic. He's got some time under his belt being in the system, so it's much more familiar. Yet if we're gonna take that as truth, how do you feel optimistic about this injury and what he would look like coming back from it if he was that derailed by a thumb injury?
Well, the only thing I would say that could be the case is that he is become a better pro, and that's part of it. Part of that is adjusting to that. And, so if you look at him versus Disley, don't you get the feeling that Disley is not going to have any problems with it? The problem with him is I feel like I don't think he's going to have any confidence about testing the Achilles and that repair and everything. I just think it's going to be the worry with him is he a guy that's going to be injured every year? Is he going to be kind of a delicate guy? Although
he's going to be your new version of CJ ProSize.
Yeah. Well, I don't ever get the feeling. I mean, CJ ProSize had a lot of, it wasn't very clear cut whether he was injured or not. I mean, you can't play, you can't even walk with a patella tendon torn and an Achilles torn. And I do think CJ ProSize kind of falls into the category of what we used to call track guys. If they don't feel right, they're not going to be able to get through it. And it's not necessarily a toughness thing. It's just that's just how he plays. So I would say the good news is on this, though, you can get late round running backs. I mean, Chris Carson, prime example. And whatever people think about Travis Homer, I really like him. But, those guys are late round draft choices. And this year, Nick Chubb, who was a first rounder, obviously everybody loved what they saw out of him, and he was a second leading runner behind Derrick Henry, and he was a first round draft choice. But in order to get guys like that, and then you have three guys to choose from there, maybe CJ ProSize signs somewhere else, whatever. But if he's in camp, Carson's in camp, Penny's in camp, Homer's in camp, and then you draft a guy, and I think that's the way you have to go about it these days, is have a stable of running backs. Because they're going to get injured.
Yeah, so, well, they could end up drafting a guy, and I'm sure they will at some point. You also have some running backs in free agency that you might want to take a look at.
Let me ask you that. What would be the better avenue? That you spend one of your draft picks on a running back? Because you did it last year. You got Homer. I assume they like him and want to continue to develop. Or do you spend some money that you've got on a free agent running back out there who's not, and I understand everybody wants Henry and the elite, but just somebody to fill the gap. You spent minimal money on Marshawn Lynch last year. Maybe something a little bit more productive in the way of
I don't want to see him bring back Marshawn Lynch.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying in the way of a veteran, though. Would it be better to draft, or would you? Because I would prefer they go with a guy who's got some time under his belt. Yeah, maybe he's not a superstar, but he can fill a gap until everybody gets healthy, or he can be there if somebody goes down or they're not ready. Just kind of an everything guy who's got years under his belt.
Yeah, well. Certainly, when you consider Chris Carson, his injury history, one play away from Travis Homer being your lead back, the situation as it is right now. So I'm just looking at the free agents that are available out there, and you're excluding Derrick Henry. Kenyon Drake from Arizona, I know that they want to keep him there with the Cardinals with that new offense they have and how good he looks. So, and Melvin Gordon is an option. I was also looking at Carlos Hyde from Houston, but Yeah, I tend to think what Dave is saying, that they're probably going to look at another running back in the draft over maybe someone in free agency. But I wouldn't mind seeing a veteran guy come in here. Maybe a little younger than Marshawn, though.
Well, the only reason I guess I would not want a veteran guy is because with running backs, unless you're Frank Gore, it's about the mileage that these guys have.
Right.
And I feel like there's only so much that you're going to get. And if you can, you know, if they're good at late round. I mean, I trust Schneider in the later rounds more than anybody. I mean, that's where he really makes his way. And if you can get somebody for a sixth-round draft choice, fifth-round draft choice, but, you know, 206 says, we'll stick with Carson. Well, yeah.
Nobody,
love to stick with Carson.
This isn't moving away from Carson. This is you need depth, and he isn't totally healthy right now. We're assuming he'll be healthy for training camp, but you have zero depth behind him outside of Homer because the assumption is Penny's not going to be there and ProSize isn't going to be back. So that's what this conversation is about. Nobody's bailing on Carson.
Well, and I've gone away from what I felt last year, because last year I was thinking, man, Chris Carson is so much better than Rashad Penny, especially early in the year. That go ahead and give him all the carries and forget about Penny and Homer and ProSize and just give all the carries. And I still go back to that old school way of doing it with a running back. But now we can see with Chris Carson that's just not going to work with his violent running style. He's not going to hold up over the course of a season. He hasn't done it yet, so. This is a big season for him, though, because he's in a contract year, and I imagine he's going to go over 1,000 yards, but how many games are you going to get from him?
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. If, let's say he does come back and he's healthy, or maybe gets nicked up, like, what, 2018, he missed two games, I think.
Carson?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's missed a game, at least a game every year.
Right, he missed two, I know, in 18. It was Arizona, and I can't remember what the other one was. Oh, it was the Rams. Yeah, and they ended up running for a lot of yards in 18 against the Rams down there. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way I think it's going in the NFL. Nobody wants to pay a running back, and it would be interesting to see if he comes back, has a good year, whether they give him a big contract or not, because I think that there is some thinking that, hey, you just have a stable of guys. But it sounds weird to say that, considering the fact that the Seahawks want to run the ball. You know, so maybe this spate of injuries with Carson just kind of goes away and clears up. It usually doesn't go that way. It usually means that the more you get injured, it's not like all of a sudden you get injured early on in your career and then it just goes away. Yeah, it's usually the other way around.
You tend not to become more durable,
right?
Unless you're just somebody who didn't condition well, who didn't train well. But just look at the guy. He's a rock. I mean, he couldn't train any harder. But 2017, he played just four games. 18, he played 14. Last year, played 15. So he's missed time each year. You know, this is a wait-and-see year. But to your question, would you commit big money to him? I like Chris Carson a lot, but I don't know that I would do that.
Yeah, but what if he has a big season this year and goes 16 games? And you're looking, he's going to be 26 in September, right at the beginning of the season. So he'd still conceivably have another good 4 years left.
Well, and didn't Pete say in that clip there that it's like, there's something about, like, there's not a lot he has to do with this. It's just a matter of letting it heal.
Yeah, yeah. He's saying they just want to make sure he's not doing too much.
Right.
That, you know, he's a workout warrior. They don't want him doing too much. So Pete Carroll was also asked about Marshawn Lynch. Here's what he had to say about him.
Marshawn made an exceptional impression coming back. Starting with me, you know, he worked really hard to get to the point where he had a chance to be available, and you know how he held on to that thought that maybe he could play here late in the season. He reported in good shape. He performed well, scored four touchdowns in the last few games, did a great job for us, just picking things up and showing how what it takes to focus and be available and all of that. He was gracious and great to all the young guys. It didn't matter how old you were. He was just good to everybody.
I get the feeling that if Marshawn's going to play at all, he would only do it if it was here.
Yeah, that's what Mike Robb said.
Yeah.
Michael Robinson, his unofficial spokesperson, as he called himself,
right,
said he thinks he wants to play again and thinks if he does do that, the only place he would agree to play would be in Seattle.
Injuries are just such a weird thing. Getting back to Carson, that, you know, I played in a time when Bill Romanowski played. I don't think that guy ever got hurt playing linebacker, and he was reckless and everything. I always got hurt. Always. My gosh, 6 of the 9 years I played, and 8 of those were as a starting linebacker, there was only twice that I came out clean. Came out the end of the season having not had an injury. So you know, and I played hard and everything, but you couldn't say that Romanowski didn't play hard. So, I mean, it's just weird how some guys just are a little bit more reckless, or maybe it's just the way they're built, or maybe it's just their movements and the way they play. That's why I'm always just so fascinated by players like Larry Fitzgerald, for example. I mean, he's played for so many years. I think he's like 200 out of 215 games or something. He's missed two, and he's out there getting hit, and it's just – it's almost like luck. I mean, and to me, and they always say it's that hokey, you know, the best ability is availability. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you're looking at a player, like I would have never drafted me coming out of college.
Based on your knee injury.
Yeah. I mean, geez, I had a major dislocation. Then I had, you know, I broke my foot my freshman year. And then I had a shoulder injury in the spring where that I had to have repaired. And yeah, I mean, there was just all kinds of things that that would say, hey, let's stay away from this guy, because as good of a player as he is, he's no good to you if you can't get him out on the field. And, yeah, some players just have for – I don't know if you call it bad luck or what, but I'm just hoping that's not the case with Chris Carson is my point. I just love the way he plays. I love his effort. I love everything about him off the field. He's a very low-key guy. You get the idea that he doesn't care that much about money. He doesn't care about fame or status or anything like that. He just wants to play football, and it just would be a real shame if he ends up being one of those guys that's always
hurt. What if he has the season that Jim just brought up? He goes 16 games and right. Then whatever playoffs there are, and he's healthy the whole year, it goes for 1,400-1,400 yards.
I would pay
his contract year.
I would pay him. I mean, if he can stay healthy this next year, and you know, reasonably healthy, let's say they decide to scratch him. You know, and maybe he's not a healthy scratch, but he's just banged up. Remember, this happened one of the games in 2018. Just to be fair, of the two games, I know that on one of them, it was the week after he had carried the ball like 33 times against Dallas. And he got 103 yards, and he was worn out and beat up. And so they just rested him. Yeah, so that's no big deal. I mean, to me, that's not like, oh, this guy's injury prone. It's just that he's getting pounded. And the way he plays, and we talked to him about this, you know, he said, yeah, I'm looking at some of these where I could probably just go out of bounds. Yeah, I remember specifically him hunting up a defensive back in Atlanta so that he could hit him.
He always
as
like
he went over the
looking for a target,
the goal line. Exactly. So, you know, if he changes the way he plays a little bit, maybe that will help him. But I love, and somebody brought up the fumble thing. That definitely has to get better mm-hmm. for him. I mean, if he continues to fumble the ball away, then, you know, that's going to be a problem.
One more from Pete Carroll. This is outside of the running back situation. We've talked about the O-line and shifting that may go on there, and one of the names you fall back on is a replacement for Yapati, or if Fetty goes, or what have you. It's Jamarco Jones. Here's what Pete Carroll said about him.
Jamarco did a nice job for us. He really did. He surprised us a little bit that he would be so comfortable playing guard, particularly on the right side, because he'd been a left side guy and a left tackle for most of his playing time. Mike Solari always said he was a really savvy football player, and the game, you know, made sense to him, and he could, you know, just assimilate our stuff from his old stuff and make sense to look good and responsible about his position right from the beginning. We're counting on him to be very versatile and very much a part of the competition, to be, you know, for all the playtime. He's worthy of that, and he deserves that shot. He's got to get well. He's got a little shoulder work that he had done. He's got to come back strong from that, which he's working on all the way and should. But exciting is an exciting start for him.
Little shoulder work being done.
Yeah, it's
just a little cleanup.
But yeah. Jones, I mean, you like his versatility. It sounds, I mean, he played better at guard than he did at tackle. But
well, and like Pete said, he came from the other side.
Yeah,
yeah, and they threw
the left
him
tackle. Yeah,
yeah, and he played a little bit of left guard, but they threw him into the right guard spot. And that game was the home game against the Rams, and he maxed out Brockers and Fowler a couple of times. It was surprising to me. So yeah, that's exciting about him. And we've had some discussions about offensive line, and maybe not as much as everybody thinks because of Russell's sack numbers, but I thought that going into that last year, well, I just remember this. I'll just go off of this. Bob wasn't complaining about the offensive line. How about that?
You weren't?
Not as much.
Not as much.
No.
Oh, sure, he was complaining. But,
yeah, yeah. But
it's 48 sacks still versus 51 the year before, so yeah. There was slight improvement.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually thought the line was better the year previous.
Oh,
it ended better than what we saw last year. But we
well, yeah, because they ran for 160 yards.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get into more of that. We got more sound from Pete Carroll, John Schneider from the Combine. But right now, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
How about that?
Whoa. Big voice guy checking in.
Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Yeah.
Good.
That got you guys, huh?
Yeah, it did.
All right, we'll start with a bit of a sad story, but Michael Jordan had a good moment when thousands gathered at the Staples Center yesterday for the memorial of Kobe and Gianna Bryant. And this is what Michael Jordan said when he spoke.
He wanted to be the best basketball player that he could be. And as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be. Now he's got me. I'll have to look at another crying meme for the Knicks. Because I didn't want to see her for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, we know about the crying Jordan meme, and so now he's got
another one. He says there's a new one.
Yeah, Michael Jordan, heartfelt moment there.
I saw a couple of clips from this, and it was, I mean, obviously there were tons of tears and sorrow and everything, but it was kind of nice to see some of those moments with a laugh, and Shaq had a funny line about him talking to him, saying there's no I in team, and he said, yeah, but there's an M and an E. Bleeper.
Yeah,
some moments of lightness that were...
I had to turn it off. It was too sad. You know, when Vanessa, the mother and wife of Kobe Bryant, when she was talking about her little girl coming in and kissing her and about her kisses, and I always complain about... I make jokes about my daughter and say that if I'd had her first, we'd have one kid and whatnot, but I have this picture of Kendall... where she's like 1 year old and she's got this shopping bag over her head and she's kissing me, you know, and I thought about that picture and just went, oh my gosh, I don't know how. I mean, that's her whole world for Vanessa. I mean, her husband and one of her daughters, I don't know how you get through that.
I have no idea how she was able to get up there and speak.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, and she said God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other. And yeah, I just have no idea how she did it.
They've been together for 17 years. And I heard somebody also bring up the fact that Kobe's parents were there too, man. I mean, I don't care how old your kid is. You're not supposed to outlive, you know, your kids.
UW broke their 9-game losing streak with an 87-52 win over Cal on Saturday.
I told you guys. I told you.
Well, it sounded like, did Mike Hopkins get emotional too after the game?
He did. He did, and then he did kind of a little drop the mic thing at the end of his... But yeah, his voice was cracking a little bit. So
is this the beginning of... here's that cut. Here comes, from yesterday.
And I also want to give a shout-out to the fans. Whenever you lose, it can be difficult, right? And the support that we've got from the dog pack and our fans is huge. Shows you what this place can be and what it's going to be. So thank you, fans out there. Go Dogs!
Well, I love you, Coach Hopkins. But,
hasn't lost his enthusiasm.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to be a one-game winning streak. The Cougs are coming to town on Friday. Isaac Bonton is going to be back in the lineup. We're a completely different team with Bonton out there.
Who's cocky and about the Cougs all of a sudden?
The Cougs are going to sweep.
Of course he is.
Dave and I have been talking you off the ledge all year.
Hey, can I ask you something? Do I interrupt you when you're talking?
Yes, you do often.
No, not very often.
Yeah, often.
I think that's kind of rude. I'm trying to make a point about the Cougar basketball team, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
We've
tell
heard
us.
It before.
All right. So CJ Ellaby, remember he had 34 against the Huskies last time? Mm-hmm. He's going to have 35 there at Heck Ed on Friday night.
Who'd you pick to win that first game?
The Huskies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Who'd we pick, Dave?
We were with the Cougs on that one.
All righty.
Okay.
All right, there you go. All coming up 3:30 is a little baseball talk. It was good.
Yeah,
it was good. I just like
row,
that you've got your confidence
I'm
back.
Just going to interrupt you as you're going to break
That's
here.
That's fine. I can
introduce Ryan Rollins.
John Clayton will be with us at 4 o'clock.
Four
El Hombre will be with us at 5 o'clock. But coming up next, now that spring training is underway, go ahead, keep going, Jim. It's time to check in with our favorite Aussie, the hillbilly himself, as he refers to him.
35 for LB. Yeah.
Ryan Roland Smith will join us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We'll be catching up with Ryan Roland Smith here shortly. Or is he there? He's ready. Okay. I thought we were efforting him, but he's there. Ryan, how are you, man?
Good. Just patiently waiting. I've been waiting for about 20 minutes, by the way.
Have you? We're really sorry. We had to talk about the Seahawks before.
Oh, well, then you heard me talking about you being a hillbilly.
There you go. A bogan.
Bogan.
A bogan. So that's what they call hillbillies in Australia?
Yeah, bogan. It's basically like an Australian, you know, redneck bogan. That's me.
And that's
you. In Newcastle. And the accent gets a lot thicker, a lot more bogany when I'm back home.
Bogan.
I prefer hillbilly to redneck.
Hillbilly, there you go.
Yeah. But anyway.
What, and you got a podcast out there, Ryan?
I do. I just started it. Yeah. I got a chance to sit down with Marco Gonzalez back around Christmas time. We sat down for an hour. It was awesome. It was one of those things where when the guy signs that multi-year deal, like a month later, you're like fist pump and you're so happy for him because you get a chance to really get to know him, his relationship with his dad, get knocked back from schools when he was in high, like from colleges when he was in high school, all those little things that make up who he is and how important he is with the Mariners. So that just kicked off. It's called The Top Step. I called it that because my favorite days playing in the big leagues, in between starts, sitting up on that top step, just telling stories. And I got a chance to sit down with Marco for an hour. It was awesome. We covered a lot. And it's going to be him and other Mariner players, hopefully some Seahawks in there, some other athletes, and just hear their stories. It's going to be a lot of fun.
How often are you going to be doing it? Like once a week, or what's the schedule on it?
Well, I'm going to spring training next week. I was going to ask when you guys are heading down. I'm not sure. Are you guys going down next week?
Middle of March.
Yeah.
Middle of March.
16th, I think.
You're going to miss us?
I think I might still be there. I don't know. I've got to figure that out. But, there's a few Mariner players who have said, they definitely want to sit down. So it'll just kind of come out whenever I feel like letting them out there, I guess, at this point. But, some Mariner players. There's some, Liam Hendricks with the Oakland A's. James Paxton said he wants to jump on, so it'll be good. Hear their story, man. I love hearing those stories.
Well, make sure James doesn't hurt himself jumping on there. That's been a problem for him. So, hey, let's
make sure.
Ryan, let's talk about this team. And it's a weird excitement about the season. I mean, I always look forward to the baseball season because I just love the sport. And this is a season we're going into sort of knowing that, it's not about wins this year. It's from the top down, they've said that and emphasized that message. It's about the youth and really, we're going to start to see pieces of this core that they're developing. We're going to get a chance to watch it firsthand. How do you approach a season like that as a guy in your position when you know that we're not really looking at playoffs? That's not the reality of the season.
Yeah, well, look, I'm like you, man. I'm excited. Baseball's coming back. We get to watch it day in, day out. And I think if you take it, like you said, and this is something that the Mariners are hoping that their viewers take it as well, is that you're getting a chance to watch one of the best farm systems, top five farm systems, which is one of the worst 2 years ago. So it's pretty amazing what they've done player development-wise, not only getting these guys into the system, but more importantly, how they develop them in the last 6 to 12 months. So we're going to see who's going to be a stud, who's not, and that's what we're going to see the next 6 months. And these guys are just slowly going to come up. And for the first time, honestly, in years, and I've been doing this now only for a couple of years, since 2016, this is the first year where it could be May, could be June. All of a sudden, this guy comes up. Then Logan Gilbert comes up. Justin Dunn, if he's starting the year in AAA, then he comes up. So you're going to get a chance to get excited to watch big-time prospects make their debut and go on and start their infancy of their career. So that's the exciting part of it. Again, I don't want to sit here and try and sell it and say, hey, look, they're not going to make the playoffs. But, hey, hang in there because it's really exciting to watch. But I think if you take it to the point where you are going to be witnessing something that could be great in a couple of years, that's exciting for me. I love watching guys make their debuts.
All right, so guys that aren't or considered, I guess, veterans, pitchers, Kikuchi. Tell us about Yusei Kikuchi, because we see, he starts off a couple strikeouts, and then he hits a batter, and he gives up some runs. But afterwards, it sounded like service was happy. Tell us from your eye, being a former pitcher, what is it that's different about Kikuchi this year?
Well, first of all, I just want to, this time of year, you're going to hear the, he's just getting his work in phrase over and over.
Working on his stuff, right?
Yeah, it's that's fair enough. Start one, start two. If you're starting to talk about, he's just getting his work in, he's just giving up an eight spot in the third inning by start four, start five, then we've got issues. I think Yusei Kikuchi, the one optimistic you know, part on him was, you know, he fixed his delivery, made it more fluent. I think the big thing for him, and we saw this last year, it's everything between the ears. Mentally, how can he overcome stressful positions? When the heart rate's through the roof, how can you overcome that runner on second and make that big pitch? That was the big barrier for him last year. So when he gets knocked around, you know, whether it's first, second, third inning, first start, second start, third start, he can't walk away from that and go, oh, man, you know, I got knocked around, or, oh, hey, it's only spring training, who cares? He has to get comfortable being uncomfortable in those situations. So I think for him, and even Marco Gonzalez, you know, talking about him as well, I know he's, you know, he's looked at as the number one pitcher on this team. He's a veteran presence. This is a young team. He still is in that crucial point at this time of year when you get hit around, that runners at second, that one pitch, making that pitch, getting that feel early is so important, because Yusei Kikuchi, it all comes down to the mental side of the game for him. And we're going to see that once, you know, by the end of April, going into May, we'll see what he's all about.
Hey, sure encouraging, Ryan, to look at the box score today and see Justice Sheffield, two innings, three strikeouts, no hits, no walks. So a really good line score for him. What Sheffield last year, bouncing up and down, what are you expecting from him this year?
Well, you know, first of all, going down to Double A, start the year off in Triple A, big expectations in, you know, different environment, different guys, you know, all those little things. I'm not making excuses. Goes to Double A and gets really comfortable, starts enjoying pitching. When you're a young player and you're as young as Justice Sheffield and you're a stuff guy like he is, it's got to be fun. If it's not fun, it becomes a situation where you have to overprocess and do all these little things that you don't enjoy doing. It's not going to be fun, and you're not going to have results. So for him, the more that he gets that, I'm going to throw this change up down the middle, that third pitch, or I'm going to throw this slider with two strikes, whatever the situation is, and you get that big swing and miss, just put that in the memory bank and enjoy that process. The minute all of a sudden that, you know, start three or outing three or whatever it is, that he goes back into the video room and then they start to you know, nitpick on something, that doesn't work for him. So I think outings like today are huge for him. Get the confidence through the roof and enjoy pitching. Just, you know, like he did, we started to see at the end of last year.
Hey, Ryan, quickly, just in terms of how you approached spring training, we always hear about pitchers and they're not worried about results. And if they get knocked around, they don't care because they're working on one thing. You might be throwing the same pitch over and over and over. Is that true? Or do we just repeat that?
Yeah, I could talk about this for days because, again, like I said, that one, you know, cliche, that saying. I used to have an inside joke. Ted Walsh was the clubby with the Mariners for a long time. Him and I got along really well. And, you know, I'd come in, first, second, start, whatever it was, you know, give up that sixth spot. And it doesn't feel good. I am not the kind of person that can walk away from that and go, oh, it's just spring training, who cares? I'm working on this. I look at that, and it can get tattooed in your brain, that change up down in a way that you thought was nasty, and it gets rocked into right center field. And I know it's Peoria and all this, whatever. But that can really get tattooed in your brain when you're talking about April. So but the inside joke was, every time I'd be talking to the media, you know, I'd give it up, or I wouldn't, or I'd pitch well, or whatever. I'm just getting my work in and see how many looks I can get from him across the other side of the clubhouse. But when you start to move into outing number four, outing number five, whether you're in the bullpen or whatever, you can't sit there and say, this is spring training. That's where, if you are going to get hit around those first couple, like, you know, like Marco yesterday, you have to, first of all, take those getting hit, checking the runner at second, all those little things. You have to get some value out of that because it's going to happen during the season. But they're the times where that timing and that feel for that pitch has to be on, because all of a sudden April rolls around and the light goes on. And it happened to me 2010. I remember it as clear as day, April 15th. I couldn't make that, oh, it's early, I'm getting my work in. No, because these games count. And all of a sudden that can snowball out of control. So you can use the whole working on something, probably any the outing number one, outing number two, then we're going to start going to work.
Gotcha. Ryan, great stuff, man. We're looking forward to Tuesdays with you throughout the season. Again, his new podcast, The Top Step, will be out there for you as well. Marco Gonzalez, his guest. Congrats on that. We look forward to talking again to you next week, I should say, next Tuesday.
Sounds good, guys. Can't wait.
There you go.
Thanks, Ryan.
There's Ryan Roland Smith, the Bogan. I like that word, Bogan. Bogany.
Well, every week we should get a new term from him.
Bogany. All right, coming up, the NFL Combine is in full swing. We're going to test our knowledge of some of the scouting terms being thrown around. That's coming up next here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
All right, we got some game show music here. We're going to play a little game. A lot of terms being thrown around at the Combine. Some are new, some are old. Some Dave's going to be disqualified from because he knows what it means.
Well, and he sent some in from his days as a player, too.
Yeah.
So there's lots of them that we can't repeat.
Yeah, we were going over those in the sports bit. Those are the best ones.
All of a sudden, out of the blue.
You're not going to have the honeymoon one?
Maura asks me that one. And I was like, what?
It stood out.
She says it so innocently,
literally.
Inappropriate.
Yeah, very inappropriate. But, yeah, I had an old coach from the 1930s, basically, who had all kinds of different things. John Paul Young. Awesome guy. I loved him.
Colorful.
But he had lots of funny things to say.
Very colorful.
And in the beginning, I was like, what? Jim, you probably don't remember this, but Danny used to love that, where he would do the thumb thing.
Oh, yeah.
Rotating thumb thing. One in his mouth and the other in his rear end, and then he would rotate. So when I turned around and looked and he was doing that, I knew I screwed up. He's like, you got one in your mouth and the other in your rear end, and you're rotating. And so that's kind of a long thing to say for, hey, you screwed that up.
Yeah,
so
that's instead, going through a lot of effort.
I would just turn around, and he'd be way in the back, you know, 30 yards back, and he would just do the motion of rotating the thumbs. You can see it on the stream.
Yeah, if you're watching
that's
the stream.
This is one time I appreciate that we have the stream.
Oh, good. You're happy to be on video now? Happy
yeah, to go to 710sports.com to witness Dave and all of his majesty here. All right, throw some of these at us. Let's see how we do.
All right, yeah, this was on ESPN.com. Jeff Legwald and Jeremy Willis wrote up some of these terms, and then Wyman threw in a couple, too. So we'll start with one of the ESPN ones. If I was to say a player has alligator arms, what would be your guess as to what that means?
Fear to stretch out for the ball. Fear of getting hit. Their arms get shorter.
That is correct,
Jim,
Bob
you
Stelton.
Too? You got that one?
Yeah.
I think everybody knows that one, probably.
Everybody knows that one.
Oh, all right. Well, let's get harder here.
Well, I was going to say, like, even like my wife might know that one, but maybe not. I don't know. All right.
Washcloth tackler.
What? Ooh. It doesn't sound complimentary. Washcloth tackler, he gets a tackle, but doesn't wrap up, and the guy continues to go down the field.
He doesn't take him to the ground. How about that? Doesn't want to get dirty.
You know, I don't know this one.
You don't know this one?
No.
I've never heard this one.
I'm going to say not taking him to the ground.
I would say that, yeah, he jumps on top of him.
He gets wiped.
He gets taken for a ride.
I think Jim had it.
Gets wiped away.
Their definition says, visualize throwing a wet washcloth against something only to watch it stick briefly and fall off. This is the guy who ends up sliding off the runners that make the big plays.
You know what? That's a good one. I didn't know that one. I just saw Jaron Reed have a washcloth tackle.
Yeah, you were one of those. Looking at his film.
Should have made that, but
not impressed. All right.
How about if I referred to someone as a trash can full of dirt?
Trash can full of dirt.
He's a real stout guy like Puna Ford.
Trash can full of dirt. That sounds pretty good.
I think Jim's right.
Yeah, I'll go with Jim on that one.
Jim is right. This refers to usually a defensive lineman who is hard to move out of the way.
Nice.
But have you ever heard that one?
No.
I had neither.
Do you think that I
had
not heard that one, but it made sense to me. And that was my guess that it was that. Do you think Al Woods would appreciate us calling him a trash can full of dirt?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of
a compliment.
Is
that what we called him when he got suspended?
No.
No?
Now, why do you have to bring that up?
I don't know. I never know why I bring stuff up. Just kind of.
Jim's in a mood today.
There's got to be a. You are in a dark mood today. There's got to be some kind of a phrase for when Jim says something that he's surprised that he thinks that. Maybe we'll get like an Australian term for that.
Well, a scale of 1 to 10, I thought maybe I shouldn't say what I said about Al Woods, and then, the hell with it.
That's there in my head.
So where were you on the scale?
like a 1.
A 1. Yeah.
We'll go with one of Wyman so he can't guess here. Shoe duster.
A shoe duster.
A guy that tackles down by the feet and ankles.
Or tackled him by the feet and the ankles.
Jim is on fire today.
Yeah, that's what I would go with it. You grab. You just got the very end.
And sometimes miss. A shoe duster is when you aim low. You don't want to take a guy on up high and you miss the tackle. Shoe duster. Jim on fire. Jim is.
Is there a prize after this?
En fuego.
yeah, I'll think of one.
Okay.
How about a cow on ice?
a cow, somebody who's got terrible footwork.
Yeah, bad balance.
Yeah, bad
balance. Spends a lot of time falling and getting up.
That's pretty good.
I agree with Bob.
I haven't heard of that one either.
I haven't either.
I had neither.
That was a good one. Bob, score one for Bob.
Click and close.
Wait, what? Say it again?
Click and close.
Click and close.
Oh, I don't know this one.
It's got to be something about a defensive back closing in on something.
Yeah.
It's got to
like
be.
Well, what's the click part of it?
I don't know.
Maybe it's like he takes it like one step and then takes a good angle. I don't know. What is it? Click and close.
My best guess has got something to do with a defensive back, but what
the
is it?
The ability to go backward, then forward quickly, an essential skill for defensive backs spending their professional careers doing this cha-cha in cleats.
There we go.
Well, you got the DB part of it, right?
Mm. Yeah, that's. I remember a guy working me out. Oh, you know what? It was John Paul Young, and it was when he was coaching for the Chiefs, and I remember this guy doesn't make very much sense, and then 9 years later, he ends up being my coach. but yeah, he wanted you to come out of your break in one step. So, like, you drop back in your zone coverage, and instead of taking, like, two or three steps, he wanted you to take one step, and I couldn't do it because I just never thought about it before. But it's one of those things that you have to be able to do in order to get to the next level. So, yeah, that makes sense. There you go, Bob. Score one for Bob.
We got another Wyman one here. Great power source.
Oh, that's a big backside.
That is. Ding, ding, ding.
There you go.
How about body beautiful guy? This is another Wyman one.
Oh, yeah.
They look good,
but they don't.
Looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Jim's on fire.
Well,
Bob, too.
All right, we'll do one more here. Go home gear.
Go home gear.
Go home gear.
Is this one of yours, Dave?
No, I don't know this one. Go home gear.
The ball carrier whose speed immediately separates him once he has the ball.
He goes home.
Oh, I was thinking gear, like his clothing or something.
Yeah.
I was thinking that kind of gear. Go home gear. Okay.
How many years have we been watching football?
Long time.
Yeah, and most of these terms we've never heard of.
Yeah, this is all a bunch of scouts, though, that sit around in dark rooms and look at film for years and years, and they're usually not in the media.
Now, how many of these do you think the professor would know?
We'll find out.
We'll throw a couple of his way, right? He's going to join us next, the professor live from Indianapolis. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.